Upheaval in one or more of several countries in the Middle East tends to get around to mention the Kurds, the Kurdish people. Those of us with a geographical bent may reach for a map and come up empty. Kurdistan is a place, but not a country. The Kurds are scattered across Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran, with smaller enclaves in a few other countries, and no single country to call their own. Our first guest spent time among the Kurdish people. Timothy Dolan is a former professor at Southern Oregon University. He brought his teaching skills to Kurdistan earlier this year, and he offers some insights. Timothy, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So what brought you to Kurdistan? What led to this posting?
Well, it was a little bit serendipitous. I happened to know their dean, Dr. Albert Wolf, who was a colleague of mine at ADA University in Azerbaijan, which is their former diplomatic university. So I had a bit of an in and some curiosity, and one thing led to another, and I ended up over there this year.
This is the American University of Kurdistan, AUK?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And where is that?
It's in a city named Duhok, which is in northern Iraq. It's a city of about 350,000 people, and it is a little similar to Ashland in that it's, you know, at some elevation in the mountains in a valley with a creek running through it about twice the size of Bear Creek, and a lot lusher than what you usually see in news reports about that region.
People do get a sense of a dry, dusty region, and they may think of the Kurds as nomadic. But, I mean, the pictures that I've seen of the American University of Kurdistan seem to be a fairly substantial place.
Yeah, it is. The joke is it looks like one of Saddam Hussein's old palaces.
Ah.
But it is a recent university. It was founded in 2014, which was not the best timing. That was when ISIS began its move in towards the area. But Duhok had always been secure. The ISIS forces never got closer than between us and Highway 62, about 12 miles away.
Okay. So, but there were ISIS forces certainly in the region.
There were, but there was also the Peshmerga, the Kurdish forces that stood up and defended the area very effectively.
How much had you known about Kurdistan before you went, and was there much trepidation about going?
Well, like most people, I didn't know very much. I mean, I knew the word. I knew that there were a people named the Kurds, and I knew that they were effective against ISIS during the rise of that attempted caliphate. But beyond that, I really didn't know that much. Of course, I did background research and was assured by the people at the university that it was a safe and secure area. And it definitely was. In fact, my first few months there, it was actually kind of boring. People were very relaxed and very gracious, and there was no tension in the air at all.
If you had not known that there was a you know, battle situation going on a few miles away, if you hadn't known it from the news, would you have known it from living there?
Not really. There's not much of a military presence. I was very surprised at that. I've lived in Egypt. I've mentioned living in Azerbaijan, which were much more of a military presence in those two countries than what I saw in Kurdistan, northern Iraq. Very occasionally, you would see some uniformed people, but they were usually coming back from a duty station and just going back to their families in the city.
Yeah, I didn't ask about this. Duhok is in Iraq.
It is. It's in northern Iraq. Mm-hmm. It's the Kurdish region of northern Iraq, and it is a de facto autonomous region. It has its own parliament and its own flag. You will not see an Iraqi flag other than there was one at the university and there's one at the Bank of Baghdad. But otherwise, you don't see an Iraqi flag in that area.
Was there much difficulty in traveling there?
Not really, other than going through Turkey. And I do have a story about that, which occurred in March, where I, through a hilarious, call it hilarious, misadventure, ended up taking a bus across Turkey. It turned out to be the ISIS foreign fighters tour bus, because this is what thousands of foreign fighters use. It was a route.
It was how the foreign fighters get into join ISIS?
It was how they got into Syria to fight for the caliphate. And I should say that Turkey knew all about this. So they were fine with it. And it worked for their interests. I went on the same route that the foreign fighters went on very nice buses with little video displays in the back showing a round of movies that included John Wick 2, Suicide Squad.
So you might as well have been traveling to Niagara Falls as well as going to Kurdistan. But so were the, did you know at the time that this was the bus that the foreign fighters used to get to
No, it occurred to me as we came to the Syrian frontier, and I knew the entry points that they took, and there they were.
Wow. So nothing about the, that it'll look like people who were about to join ISIS on the bus or anything like that?
Oh, no, no. This was – if I'd been there 2 years earlier, I would have been amongst foreign fighters. But at this point, they'd been successfully choked off, and so they weren't continuing to come in that way.
Okay. Timothy Dolan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a former professor at Southern Oregon University, taught earlier this year at the American University of Kurdistan, and he's offering his insights on what he saw and experienced among the Kurdish people. You can join us with your questions and comments on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You were talking about how that what that bus that had been the foreign fighters' supply line, basically, to ISIS, Turkey knew about it and let it go on because it served their purposes, which gets us into the whole situation of countries versus the Kurds. Turkey, you're saying, was more or less okay with ISIS because ISIS would hold the Kurds at bay, and Turkey has problems with Kurds.
Yeah, very much so. There are approximately 35 million Kurds, and the plurality of Kurds do live in southern Turkey. And that's been a thorny issue for Turkey because there has been movement by the Kurds, some for independence, but really more for increased autonomy. This has been an area of great friction for decades now. So there, if you go into the southern Turkish areas, it's very much a garrison state. There's a very, very heavy military presence, a lot of patrols, a lot of armored vehicles, you know, circling the streets, and cameras in the towns and cities nearby to kind of monitor things.
In Duhok itself, what issues did you have in just trying to be part of the landscape, part of the educational landscape? I mean, language issues, anything like that you had to deal with?
Yeah, of course, Kurds have their own language. It's, you know, linguistically, they are connected to Persia. It's a Persian, you know, Farsi language, language family. It's a distinct
Iran speaks, language. Yeah.
Exactly. So they have their own ethnic identity. There are various dialects within Kurdistan, which doesn't help matters in terms of their unification. But in terms of Duhok itself, it was, as I said, it was a bustling city. People were very relaxed, very gracious, very friendly to Americans. There's a very, very great affinity for Americans. I would say that among, and it's, by the way, it's the fourth largest ethnic group in the Middle East. And I've lived with Arabs, I've lived with Azerbaijanis who are Turkic people. And I have to say that in terms of cultural alignment, they're the most aligned to an American set of values of any peoples that I've met there.
More rights for women, things like that?
Absolutely. They've passed legislation, for example, in their parliament. They have their own parliament, very much like the Scottish have their parliament. So they've passed some very progressive legislation. 30% of the seats in their parliament are reserved for women. And they had their first woman speaker of the House of the Parliament while I was there. They've had a change of party, a peaceful transition, I might mention. So she's no longer the speaker, but that was the first woman speaker of a legislative body in the entire Middle East.
What did you teach at the American University of Kurdistan?
I taught negotiation and mediation and power and society.
You're a management professor at CORE, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. But I do have an international relations background as well, and I was able to express that through my courses. I also taught a course in globalization and global governance.
Was there an opportunity? I'm guessing there was a fairly broad one to be able to teach the kinds of things you're talking about in the class within the context of what was going on in Kurdistan and involving the Kurdish people and their statelessness.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a very important thing in terms of my teaching philosophy, which is you connect, you know, the theory to what's actually happening in the daily lives of the people. So you connect, you know, concepts to cases. So we definitely were very involved with making those connections.
Was there an opportunity to stay beyond the time you were there? You left in May, is that right?
Yeah, I did. The university is, you know, a fantastic project, but it was one of these things where it's still in its infancy, and there were certain structural issues there that were a little bit of a challenge, we'll say. Although I do have colleagues there and I do really support their mission, for me personally, it was something that I found was rewarding, but it was something where I was, okay, my time is up here and I'm going to return back to Ashland.
Would you consider going back at some point in the future?
I have a great affinity for the area. I've lived literally all over the world, Korea, Japan, Mexico, as I mentioned, Azerbaijan, Egypt, and in Duhok. Northern Iraq. It's difficult to say. I wouldn't say no if invited, but I'm not actively seeking to return either.
Timothy Dolan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a university professor formerly at Southern Oregon University, spent some time between January and May of this year at the American University of Kurdistan, and he's offering some insights on what he saw and experienced in Kurdistan among the Kurdish people. Join the conversation on the exchange if you'd like. 800-838-3760 is our phone number. You can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. There's quite a bit of diversity within Kurdistan, too, isn't there? I mean, different sects of, the different religions with the Kurdish people, is that right? And certainly different political groups.
Yeah, it is a very diverse community. There are the Kaldaran Catholics. They are reconciled with the Catholic Church. It's a Roman Catholic sect. They elect their own bishop, and they're active. It's an interesting niche that they have within Duhok. They own all the liquor stores, which, you know, in a sense makes sense. The sect of Sunni Islam that is widely practiced among the Kurds is distinct from what's practiced in Turkey. So even though you have a majority Sunni population, they are not connected theologically with Turkey, nor are they connected with Iran, which is a Shiite, you know, community, of course. Then there are the Yazidis, and the Yazidis are ethnically Kurds. They speak Kurdish. They've always lived in that area, but they are their own religious community, one that you're born into. They don't proselytize, and you're not converted to them.
So as you got to know Kurdistan and the Kurdish people a bit, did you get a sense for? I mean, it sounds like this is a well-established place and a fairly safe one at that. I mean, did you get a sense for any imminent feeling of danger to the Kurdish people from others? So I guess it's, you know, certainly Turkey has been talking for a long time about wanting to do what it ended up doing, which is pushing into Syria to push the Kurdish people out of those zones.
The Kurds have lived in a bad neighborhood for a long time. So when you're in that environment, you cope. And that was my sense of things, that Turkey is very close by. It's about an hour and a half bus ride away. And the Turks are very much present in northern Iraq. It's economically penetrated by the Turks, the hotels, the shopping malls, the apartment complexes are all Turkish operations. So their presence is obvious, and I don't think it's particularly welcomed, but it's tolerated.
So, as you were back here, what is it, has it been like to hear this news about a part of the world that you were just in just a few months ago and see this situation where the President of the United States signs off on getting American troops basically out of the way so that the troops from Turkey can go across the Syrian border and attack the Kurds?
Yeah, I take it personally. I I know these people. I know their experience. I've had interactions with people whose fathers have literally died in defense of what are, in fact, our interests as well. The withdrawal in Syria, which is, again, not all that far away, is not at all helpful in my view. And there is a sense of betrayal among the Kurds. It's rather obvious.
Grab the headphones. We have a call for you. I'm going to bring in here Ryan in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Timothy Dolan.
Oh, well, thank you. Good morning. Boy, again, Jeffrey, this is amazing. You must have had this in mind as I was watching the press conference yesterday with Erdogan and the president.
Right, Erdogan at the White House yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, how little I kind of understand. And I know that there's a negative vibe to Erdogan for a lot of different reasons, but particularly they were talking about how wonderful Turkey was in terms of treating the Kurds. And I'd like to just get some insight both in maybe the genesis of that government and certainly its impact on the Kurds.
Okay, thanks for the call, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Well, I should say from the get-go, I don't consider myself an area expert. And so my comments about Turkey are really from personal experience. And I haven't had a particularly good time in Turkey getting through the country. And I mentioned the ISIS tour. That was a 36-hour bus drive that I was on. So, but you carry on with that. Anyway, Turkey has always been problematic vis-a-vis the Kurds. As I mentioned, they have a real paranoia about the Kurdish people, frankly. They just have a distrust about their motives. And this carries over in a lot of ways. During the ISIS caliphate, and by the way, I get this from a UN Swedish bomb disposal officer, that the bulk of supplies for the IEDs that were used throughout the battle against ISIS were created in Turkey and brought in. So again, this is something that, because Turkey, as I mentioned before, the southern Turkish area is a garrison state. Nothing happens there without the Turks knowing about it. They were acquiescent in the creation of these lethal weapons to blow up forces allied against ISIS.
30 seconds left. What is the most important thing you want people to take away from what you learned about Kurdistan?
Mostly that they're a gracious people. Again, I've had some experience in the Middle East. I very much enjoyed my time with the Kurds. They have a story to tell. The Yazidis in particular are an interesting group that I think deserve protection. I wish there was time to go into the situation with the orphanages, which I did visit there. Mm-hmm. And these were the children of ISIS sex slaves and ISIS fighters. The situation there is quite dire. By Iraqi law, no Yazidi orphan can be adopted.
So I'll give you more time. Let's go into this. I'll take another 5 minutes with you then. Let's talk about that part, because that's really important. So what the orphanages are there from people who have been put into, they become orphans because of war.
Exactly. There were, of course, some passing news accounts, but just to recap that, ISIS fighters had a particular animus against the Yazidis. And the Yazidis have always been basically a despised group within the region. They're an Abrahamic religious group, but their take on the status of Lucifer makes them, in the eyes of many Muslims, devil worshippers. Their story, which, by the way, Lucifer in nowhere shows up in Genesis. It shows up only once in Isaiah, just an Old Testament reference. The story goes that Lucifer was tested by God to bow down before Adam and Eve and refused to do so, and his pride cast him out of heaven. That's the Christian, Judeo-Christian view. The Yazidis have a different view, that he was tested by God to bow down before Adam and Eve, refused to do so, and God essentially said, bravo, you know who you are. You're an immortal spiritual being. And so because of that, they're seen as devil worshippers. And there have been no less than 72 attempted exterminations of the disease. Mm-hmm. So well,
that explains why they seem to be an early target for anybody who comes into their zone.
Exactly. So when ISIS came in, they slaughtered the men, took the women as sex slaves, and now there are the offspring of those sex slaves are in these camps. The women are traumatized, of course, and very much some, in many cases, outcast. As I said, it's a closed religious community, so to have the offspring of a non-believer in their midst is problematic. Some of the kids are taken up by, because they're extended families, they have uncles, aunts, and others that will take them in, but many of them are in these orphanages, and by Iraqi law, they cannot be adopted. They are going to be languishing in these orphanages until age 18, when maybe they can immigrate at that point.
So they can't be adopted by anyone or can't be adopted out of the country?
They can't be adopted, as my understand it, definitely not out of the country. Mm-hmm. And within the country, their adoption is rare to non-existent. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen. It's not that kind of society.
So you're left with a situation where you learned a lot and got a sense of what the Kurdish people are like, and now have to sit here from afar and watch as things are done to them.
Very much so. And again, just returning very quickly back to the Yazidis, these are people that have been taken away from their homelands. They're actually a farming people living in the hills, the rural areas outside of the cities. And now they're in camps, and these camps are, you know, very, very large. They were meant to only be in existence for 6 months. They're going into their fifth year. I just got a report from one of the people at Springs of Hope, which is one of the charities operating in the camps, that these camps are literally falling apart. And now they are having to rebuild and build for permanence because these people are not going anywhere.
All right. It's a camp. It's a home now. It's gone from camping to a permanent place to live. Timothy Dolan, a former professor at Southern Oregon University, spent January through May of this year at the American University of Kurdistan in Duhok. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange and offering your insights.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Short break on the exchange. Back with Signals and Noise in just a moment.